We're going to start in 24, 9:24, please. Someone to read from 24 to 28. Very important section.
For Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Not that he should offer himself often, as the high priest enters the most holy place every year with blood of another. He then would have to suffer since the foundation of the world. But now, once at the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And as it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, to judgment.
Carry on.
So Christ has offered once to bear the sins of many. To those who will eagerly await for him, he will appear a second time, apart from sin or salvation.
Thank you very much. Okay. You remember 9:23? We were looking for better sacrifices. Plural. Plural, better sacrifices. And you remember what I've read from the Adventist Review? This verse is pointing to Jesus on the cross. You remember? So, but how come? Better sacrifices, plural, and Jesus on the cross, singular, of course. So how does it work? Plural, singular. You remember that I said this morning that in this section beginning in 9:15 to 9:23, we have a kind of general presentation. You don't find the name of Christ here, but we have a general presentation. First of all, comparison with the will, and then the historical background, referring back to the inauguration of the first covenant. All right? And the end of it was, we need better sacrifices because it's a better covenant. But then, we have Christ coming in again. So first point, where did Jesus enter? Verse 24 is very, very important. And you have seen that the definition of the place in which he entered in is, at the beginning, is a negative one. Not. Just to start the point, it is, let me take it back. For Christ did not enter a sanctuary. Again, we have Tagia here. Not a sanctuary made by human hands, so we understand that it is not on earth. That is absolutely clear. And then, next sentence, what do we have in English here? If I read my RSV, a mere copy of the true one. And what is the Greek we have behind? What is the word in Greek we have for a mere copy? No? Well, not. We have antitypos. Antitype. So that is interesting. He did not enter the antitype, but something else. Antitype of the true one. So again, we have the true one. You remember the first lecture we had? So the true one, and then the tupos, and then what was built by Moses. Here, we have the true one, and the antitupos, and, okay, again, it's a bit surprising. And you understand that in our general thinking, when we think and we use typology, the type is here, antitype is above. So we would expect Jesus to enter the antitype. Okay? That's not the case. Not in. I'm pretty convinced that if we have a typological system somewhere in the New Testament, that is to say, for example, we have it in the Epistle to the Romans Adam and Jesus. Adam is the type and Jesus is the antitype. We have it in the Epistle to Romans, but it does not work here. I would say that it is a kind of deconstruction also of typology. Not to say that typology is bad, but he does not want Hebrews to interfere with the typology. That is not his presentation. So you cannot say, well, we have the typos and he entered into the antitypos. No. Say, no. It, not, to start again with, not a sanctuary made by human hands, a mere copy, antitypos of the true one, but, and then we have the definition. But, we have the definition in two, I would say, in two sentences, or two parts of the sentences. And we have to be very careful when we interpret here. First of all, it is said, but he entered into heaven itself. So the word we have in Greek is absolutely clear again. It's Uranos. So, heaven. Okay? But that is only one part of the definition. Because if you say, he entered into heaven, well, that is very common, I would say. But we have more than that. And I think the real definition of the place into which he entered, we have it at the end of the verse, not before that. And what is the end of the verse saying?
To appear for us in God's presence.
Okay. God's presence. Okay. We have... Ta'agia. So we have met Ta'agia many times before, and then here we have heaven, and then we have next presence of God. Well, if you try to say it in Hebrew, so let us forget for a while Hauliki and let us come back to Lawrence Turner. If you say it in Hebrew, try. Who would be ready to try? Have you done Hebrew? No?
Yes?
Lipne Adonai. And the Lipne Adonai, when you say Lipne Adonai, it's not in the presence of, but it is referring directly, it's a way to say God himself. So you see my point, which is for me very important in Hebrews. The very important question, well, that was a very important question. I'm not sure it's still a very important question, but years ago, do you believe in the heavenly sanctuary? Be careful, the answer. But if I refer to the Hebrews, if I say no, are you ready? But you see that it is not a place. It's not a place to enter, and it's not, here it's also a place, heaven, okay. That is a cosmological interpretation. You find it in many commentaries. Jesus entered heaven. Well, that's not the point in Hebrews. He entered Lipne Adonai, well, I put it in Hebrew because I think also that the background, they are Jews. So the two languages are present there. So Lipne Adonai, or in the presence of God, well, that is, at the end, Jesus went close to the Father. All right? He appeared there. But you see the point? He appeared for us. It's not only the entrance of Jesus into the sanctuary, it is your entrance, my entrance, our entrance. And I think that is very powerful. It's not only, well, we have the same idea with the high priest during the Day of Atonement ceremony, isn't it? he entered, but the people was also with him. But you see, very often, well, Jesus entered into the old questions which are still there. He entered into the first and the second apartment. He. But we too, according to the Epistle to the Hebrews. And that is very important. I'm not outside of it. I'm with him. In the presence of God. In the presence of God. And for those who will not be there tonight, so we will jump to 10:19. Therefore, my friends, since we have confidence to enter the sanctuary by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is through his flesh, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us approach. Of course, the way is opened. You remember the sanctuary Shem? You cannot enter. You are a wife, you are a woman, forbidden. You are a non-Jew, forbidden. You are impure for such or such reason, forbidden. You are not a priest, forbidden. You are not high priest, forbidden. But here, by Jesus, through Jesus, we are there in the presence of God. And I would say, because you are in the presence of God, live accordingly. And that is very powerful. Can we imagine for a bit, for a second, we have this room and maybe only one large window, only one, as a tent. In the desert, they were living in a tent. And you know, in a tent, you have the entrance and that's it. You don't have windows. Bedouin tent, only the entrance to see outside. And how were the tents located? How were they positioned? You understand what I mean? The sanctuary was here. And the entrance was always faced to the sanctuary, all right? So, when you looked outside, what was visible for you, for everyone? No. Goodness, the boss is here. Don't you think that it is a good way to keep you on track? Well, we are often asking for the presence of God. Please, God, be there. Look outside. You can see him. Be careful to what you... Okay? No, just look outside. You see the point? And now, if I come back here, we are there with the Lord Jesus, so live accordingly. And that is such a power given to the believers. So, again, but Christ did not enter a sanctuary made by human hands, a mere copy of the true one, but he entered into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God on our behalf. Well, some translation, but I've checked in English, we don't have the problem in English, but in French, in some translation, we have the problem because it's not to appear, but it's to, well, it is to appear, but like a judge, or to be judged, you know? It's not the case. It's a meeting between the Father and the Son. It's not to plead for us here in this context. We have this idea somewhere else. It's not to defend, no, the entrance. That is to say, to restore or to reinstall the link between us and God. And that is the idea of the sanctuary. Wasn't it the idea at the beginning? What was the idea of the beginning? I want to dwell among you. So that is the end of the process.
I don't understand why that idea of God's presence negates two apartments as being the heavenly things. I mean, also with the Levitical, the idea of the pattern and the mount. So, I mean, you're, of course, when you're talking to me as a fifth generation Adventist, in essence, what we're doing here is overturning something.
No, I don't think so.
Well,
I would say... Yes.
If he has not entered into a first apartment or a second apartment, that's a big change in Adventist doctrine.
But I think this change has been made in 1980. I have to say clearly.
Well, I'm saying it's not been made in media.
Mm-hmm. I think. Let me say the following. I think if we refer to when did we have this. Quarterly lessons this quarter about Hebrews, was it 1 or 2 years ago? 2 years ago? When you compare what was written in this one to what we preached for years, 30 years ago, that is significantly different. The problem is that if you want the official statement or position of the church, you have it in the quarterly, but what about our church members and what we preach? Still, we preach the other song. And, well, we need to know where we want to go. But the story is a bit different. Not to say that we have abandoned the 1844 lesson, but, I repeat again, we do not use any more Hebrews for 1844. Full stop. That is another story. You could invite Lawrence Turner or somebody else to preach on or to have lectures on the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation. But that is not the story in Hebrews.
It doesn't
exclude it. I have not said that it is the only lesson or the only interpretation about the sanctuary. We have a word about the sanctuary in Hebrews, but it is not the only one. I have said this morning we have different slides. And you cannot say, well, I've taken a picture of Lou and I have one slide and it is Lou. No. You need to take many in order to have maybe a full picture of him. And that is exactly the same problem we have here. First apartment, second apartment. If we want to introduce this idea in Hebrews, I think we will miss the point. Or we will a bit destroy Hebrew. That was not the concern. But we have this idea in Daniel, in the book of Daniel and in the book of the Revelation. But it's out, I would say, out of the picture. But it is still an important picture. And I'm not saying this one is the only one. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I don't want to hear anymore about 1844. That is another topic. I've said this morning, this topic is soteriology. This one is eschatology.
There is an also, but in Daniel Revelation, you do have an eschatological soteriology. I mean, you know, I don't think you can make that clear-cut division. I mean, they're both very concerned with soteriology as well, especially Revelation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the presentation is quite different. The presentation is quite different. This one is not killing 1844. It's another topic. And we were poor. We were very poor before the glacier view crisis. We were very poor on this point. And that is, again, our difficulty with salvation. But I'm sorry. Here we have to enter into, if we take again 24 to appear in the presence of God. Well, that is exactly a parallelism. Could work in Hebrew, could work, and here it's in Greek, and it works perfectly in Greek. The second part of the sentence is the explanation of the first part. We know that. When we have studied Greek or Hebrew, we know that perfectly. So, in that case, well, to enter the place is to enter into the presence of God. Okay, the book of Revelation would say something else, and I need to take it into consideration, but I don't want to have two pictures coming together. That's not the point. I'm pretty sure that it's not good hermeneutic to mix. Well, if you go to a bad restaurant, you eat for tea or maybe at lunch soup. What is the soup made of? Well, all the rest of the previous day, and you put the mixer and so is it carrots? Is it broccoli? Is it spinach? Well, you don't know. Taste everything and nothing. I would prefer, and this soup, this for lunch was absolutely gorgeous. It was only broccoli. Good taste. Don't put everything together. And I think we have improved a lot our theology in being able to present carrot soup and broccoli soup and blah blah blah, instead of being vegetarian but you cannot know what blessing. Here? That's not a topic.
No, I mean, this is part of the recipe. By putting this with Daniel and Revelation again, leaning a different way than we've leaned before, when you add all the leanings up, we get a different taste altogether, and that is that there is not a pre-advent judgment beginning in 1844. I'm saying if we determine that through biblical study and exegesis, which we should, that's okay, but we should be clear that that's a huge overturn, especially for a group of pastors.
Well, I repeat, it's a bit, well, not a bit.
If I stand up in the pulpit and say whether I did it through exegesis, Ellen White, or my mere opinion, if I stand up and say it, it's quite a turn.
Well, we have made a turn. Look at the what was written, we don't publish that much on Hebrews today, because, well, our concern is not Hebrews. We have reached, well, I would say, a kind of consensus on Hebrews. But not a consensus on Daniel and Revelation. We have to be clear on that. We have to be clear on that. And who is ready to publish on Daniel and Revelation today in the church? Well, Stefanovic did. Have you seen the Revelation commentary? But, well, I gave it to the students. And they said to me, well, that's good. But where is he? Well, he's very capable to see the questions and the problems, but to give the answers and some solutions, it's very difficult. And what about the boss? I mean, John Pauline. Good articles, but not a commentary on Revelation. So, and I understand that it is very important for us. Yes, I understand that this 1844 and Advent judgment is a very important topic, but who is ready to address it? But I'm pleased to.
But you know what I'm saying, and people really are confused, and pastors are confused, and it's because things are changing, and the word doesn't get it. We're evolving as a church. Our thinking is changing, and people feel like they're being dishonest when they change an opinion, and they're not being told that this can happen because Ellen White says, you know, as light as we see more light, we should go that route. But they're frightened against knocking the pillars.
Yes.
What actually happens then, they throw the baby out with the bathwater, where some of us are just pastoring basically evangelical churches called Adventist churches. Because nobody wants to talk about it getting 44, because the most simple answers are too complex.
Yes.
Because the people who think that, you know, intellectuals are not always the best people to put simple stuff out, you know, and it's actually got more confusing over the years than it, you know, getting 44 made simple. I couldn't understand it at all.
It is not simple. I remember being in Africa.
Yeah, but giving people the idea that it's simple when it's not.
Yes. I remember being in Africa, and it was in 1973. with this first world mission program imposed by the General Conference. You remember, maybe? I don't remember the title. A set of 30 studies which had to be preached everywhere in the world. Okay, so we were in the institution and the boss said to us, okay, we're going to preach. So we were 10 teachers, so you can choose your topic among the 30. Of course, at the beginning it was very easy, and at the end, okay, and fortunately for me, 1844, all right, I'm going to do it. So it was in a small village in the bush in Cameroon. So I spoke in French, but needed a translator, all right, in the vernacular language. It was a teacher of the institution, black man, very clever, good Adventist for years and years. So when I started to explain, -457, the translation would give and when I said 1844, the translation would give Why? They don't have numbers. And when you ask someone, how old are you? Don't know. What about your birthday? What about your birthday? Oh, I've not calculated for long, boss. So, and the students in the department, theology department, would say to me, well, -457? We cannot understand that. Were they Adventists or not? Yes, they were Adventists. And where is the majority of the church membership today? In those countries? Are they Adventists? Yes, they are. Maybe sometimes better than us. All right? And that is a challenge. And I would like the church to address this challenge. Not to say, okay, we did it, everything. No, but we need to find a way to explain it, and more than that, to make it relevant. Have you heard of value genesis, the study, the survey? So you know that we are doing it here in Europe. In Europe, and I'm proud because I was at the beginning of it in our division, and we extended to TED as well. So have you seen the results of value genesis in America with the 1844 stuff? Well, you can predict that in 10 years, not a single youth will believe in 1844 and the Adventist and the pre-Advent judgment. So that is a disaster. Do we want that? So we need to stop being sluggish. You see what I mean? We need to stop being sluggish. I don't know how to do it. Well, it's not my field, not that I don't want to be implied, but I want also to reach a clear picture from the sermon of Hebrews. You see the point? And if I have a good picture, if I have a bad picture everywhere, I'm lost. But if I am confident in this picture, okay, I can build from this one. I'm not sure of that.
Well, it filters through and so on, but that does represent an official.
Yes, but I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure that Angel Rodriguez would support this presentation.
Yeah, like in Hebrews.
Yes, in Hebrews. But yes, but if you go to La Sierra or to Loma Linda or to
yeah,
Pacific
right.
Union.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that is. I mean, you can say, does consensus represent the whole worldwide church?
Yes.
Or do you get consensus from this university or that?
Mm-hmm.
And it throws us into a very difficult position.
But I think there is not a consensus on Daniel and Revelation.
Like coming from a different, you know, side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get all sorts of things.
Yes. 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 Thank you. No. I would say the following. It's more than a place. It is somebody. All right. And I find the same idea in the Gospel of John. Maybe we can read it tonight. Just now. 1:14. John 1:14. That's not my topic. Sorry. That's not my topic.
But the implications
are heavily on. Oh, not for interpreting Hebrews. I don't want to have a doctrine first, and then from the doctrine I need to interpret the text. I don't want to make eisegesis but exegesis. You see the difference? That is very important, and that is why sometimes among the scholars we do not agree with the BRI, because the BRI, they have a starting point. We have this doctrine and we will go to the text to prove it that the doctrine is correct. That is eisegesis. So you have a starting point and you want to prove it from going back to the Bible, okay? And that is also the way, and that is useful.
Apologetic.
Yes. Or not always apologetic, but systematic theology would do that likewise. But we have the Bible here, exegesis. Well, we go to the text, and the text is in charge of giving meaning. That is the opposite. All right? And I use, and we have used, for years, Hebrews, well, going this way, with 1844, the prayer, advent judgment, investigative judgment, and Ford helped us, but not only Ford, many other theologians said, okay, well, that's not correct. We don't find 1844, the prayer, advent judgment, but we find another meaning, and we find another message, and that is important to go this way. And we do it also for Daniel and Revelation. But the problem is that 1844 belongs to our identity. And if we touch it, for many Adventists or many scholars, you might kill Adventism. So the big question is the following. Is it possible to save Adventism without 1844 or the pre-Advent judgment? And yes, okay. Or do we need it? That is the question, in fact. And it is difficult, very difficult for the church to address this question this way. It's very difficult. And also, the texts are not helpful because the texts are complex and difficult.
You're saying it's not biblical?
Hmm?
In other words, according to that hermeneutic methodology, it's not biblical.
I would not say that. No. But it's difficult. It is difficult. Well, apocalyptic is difficult. You know, I've told the story during a lunch we had together those days. When I worked for a French translation of the Bible, we were a group of four. I was the Adventist. We had a Pentecostal, a Baptist theologian, and a historical Protestant, all right? So that was, I would say, very... We worked together for 14 years. 14 years. All right. It was quite easy to reach agreement. And, for example, when so it was not only to translate the text, but to add reference. It was a study Bible, you know, comments, footnotes, introduction. So First of all, they said to me, okay, you are Adventist. You're going to write the introduction of the book of Daniel. Of course, we know that this book is important for us, for you, all right? And then you will do the introduction of the book of Revelation. So I did. And we discussed, but it was quite easy to find an agreement of those two introductions. But, well, in addition, before saying that, when we started to write the comments on the book of Genesis, I said to them, well, wouldn't it be nice to have a kind of parallelism presentation with the days of the creation, just to enlighten the Sabbath day. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then in the middle, 7, the rest of God. So, okay, that's nice. So you open the Bible, the first chart you see, Sabbath day, rest day. All right. But, men, and brothers and sisters, when we started to comment the book of Daniel, goodness. First reference, Daniel 7. This chapter and the following chapters refer to Antiochus Epiphany. And I said to them, okay, you want this Bible to be accepted by the Seventh-day Adventists? Forget it. They would never buy it. Why? So, and that was such a discussion, because they are not able to understand, and they were, I would say, good theologians and good Christians, not liberal Christians, you know, ready to throw the Bible. Not at all, not at all. But they are unable to understand how we can interpret this way. So the only thing I was, the only thing they were ready to accept is just an asterisk at Daniel 7 saying, Antiochus Epiphany is one interpretation among many other interpretations which are as valid as this one. Full stop. But we had to struggle maybe 4 or 5 meetings to reach this agreement. And when we reached Revelation 1:10, the day, the Lord's day, goodness, they were ready to introduce the Sunday, of course. I said, no, you can't. If you introduce the Sunday, well, forget it. You will never sell such a Bible among the Adventists. Why? So such a strong discussion, and they had been ready to accept this chart just at the beginning of Genesis, but for them it was obvious it is the Sunday. So I had to argue and argue and argue, and then, okay, the reference was changed, and I was asked to write it, and so they discuss it. But I would say the following. We are strong. I think we are better in soteriology today than we were years ago. And that's a blessing. I think we start becoming better in ecclesiology, but still, we don't have really an ecclesiology. What is the church? Well, we need to work on that. But our weakness is eschatology. And when we had also, I was part of it, when we had the discussion with the Lutheran World Conference, you know, and a book has been published, agreement between the General Conference and the Lutheran World Conference. So I was present sometimes for the meetings, because it was in Geneva next to Collonges. And soteriology, no problem at all. Ellen White, you can introduce Ellen White. The Lutheran would say, okay, we agree. We don't accept, but we understand. Spiritual gift, okay, that's a bit difficult for us, but we understand. Start. Eschatology. Mm-hmm. You have to call the brethren, BRI, and some others, and it is very, very, very difficult to reach, not an agreement, but to let them understand what we want to say. That is very difficult.
Well, historicism is a minority, a very small minority position. I mean, traditionally we've been historicists. Yeah. Yeah, and everybody else is not.
And interestingly, if you open the commentary of Stefanovic, he would say at the beginning, hermeneutical chapter, what about the methodology, or which kind of system I would like to apply? I cannot answer to the question. The text is in charge. Sometimes it is historicism, sometimes not. Well, I can understand the question, the answer, but it's a bit like that. You don't know where you want to go, where he wants to go. Okay? So that is the point. Yes. Yes.
It's the matter of once and for all, Christ's activity once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that the Hebrews, it is saying that everything, does Hebrews clarify the activity of Christ at the cross and what we would superimpose as his activity now?
Mm-hmm.
Does that clarify for us, or are we simply saying that Hebrews only affirms what Christ did at Calvary?
That's a good question. I think we have a part of the answer, and that is coming back to the plural. That was the previous one. Oh, forget it. Best sacrifices, you remember, plural. And then we have the explanation. One, why is it is not possible to have a plural? And why it is once for all? What is the answer given in verse, let's say, 25, 26? We can reach the answer. I think it's easy to understand it. We have maybe two or three reasons, but the main one, why from the plural we go to the singular?
It is on blood.
That is to say, if it is his own blood, that is his life. And what was... How Jesus is introduced in the Epistle to the Hebrews, or in the Sermon to the Hebrews, Son of God, but also, if you go to chapter 2, chapter 3, which kind of son is it? Yes, superior to the angels, but also, we have the two trends in Hebrews. He suffered. He had to learn obedience. You remember that? If a very human Jesus, also a very divine one, but a very human one, all right? But this Jesus is a man. So if you read 26, for then he would have had to suffer again and again since the foundation of the world, but as it is, he has appeared... Okay, yes, 27... And just as it is appointed for mortals to die once, and after that, the judgment, so Christ. So it is not possible for him. I will give a part of my blood, and I can repeat it. It's my life, so it's once for all. First reason. Second reason. Once you reached the end, terminal, presence of God, what can you do next? What is necessary next? You have been introduced in the presence of God, and you have all your flock with you. What next? You want to go out and say to the boss, okay, I will come back. And you come back 10 days later. Return, single. No, it's not a return ticket. You know, he entered once for all. Third reason, and that is a very strong one, and that is my favorite verse, maybe in the Bible, and that is verse 28. Oh, I need to put my glasses. I know where it is, but I cannot find the verse. Number... Yes, verse 26. Can we read 26 only, please?
For then he would have to suffer repeatedly since the foundation of the world. But as it is, he's appeared once for all at the end of the ages to put away sin.
Okay. To put away sin. What do you read in your Bible? That is one translation. To put away sin.
To do away.
to do away,
to remove sin.
To remove sin. What else? What else? What do I have here? To remove. Okay, the word in Greek. And I will tell you a personal story. So it's not a verb, it's a word in Greek. Removal, you could say, right? Athetesis. All right. When I was working on this section of Hebrews, so I reached this word, athetesis. All right? And I had all the Greek, French dictionaries in front of me on my desk in a very famous library in France, private desk. So all the dictionaries, all right? Not only Greek-French, but Greek-German and Greek-English, all right? And the first dictionary I went to said to me, annulment, which is stronger than to remove. And I said to me, well, sin has been, you would say, annul, by Jesus. It's not possible. Annulment? That's so strong. So I can tell you, I spent 2 days looking everywhere, in every dictionaries, commentaries, and classical literature, to check what is the meaning of athetesis. It's much more than removal. It's annulment. And at the end of my personal experience, I said to me, well, what kind of Christian are you? What kind of believer are you? You have a text saying to you, sin, finished. And you don't believe it. Gospel. Do we believe? You see that it's not the plural, it's not sins. It's, I would say, sin, capital letter. Annulment. Once for all? You want to repeat? No. If you could do that, of course it's once for all. But my problem is, do I believe that? Do I live accordingly? You know the little book, but very interesting book, maybe the best one he ever wrote, of George Knight. The title is I Used to Be Perfect. You know this one? You remember the typo? We have in the book low capital letter, and we have lows, but plural, small letters. We have sin, capital letter, and we have sins, small letter. We have, well, always this kind of difference. Sin, annulment of sin. Do we believe that? I think that is the gospel. That is to say that the principle here, because it is the principle, that is the separation between humankind and God. It's done. Of course, Jesus entered the presence of God. The guilt that made Eve and Adam to flee, gone. The condemnation, Satan's role, gone. And again, I would say, live accordingly. How many times do we spend in church to speak about sins? Well, I don't want to say, well, okay, forget it, like some Protestants or Catholics, no sins anymore, everything is okay, you are good, I love you, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not the point. But I think if I look at my preaching, my sermons, well, too often sins are at the center, but not the annulment of sin. That is the gospel for me. and that is coming from Hebrews, and I think the world today need to hear that. You still are sinners. I am a sinner. Sorry for you, you are still sinners. But sin as a principle, forget it. Once for all, it has been solved. And we have to live, accordingly. We have here the sentence we find in Luther. Peccator simul justus, but simul justus, you know the meaning, sinner and at the same time righteous. And that is the reason why I'm saved. All right? And I think one of the most important message the church would have to preach today is this annulment of sin, to relieve the pressure. And as a pastor, we could put so much pressure on the church members, and you should do that anyway. If you not, you are da, 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 da. Breathe and look where we are with the Lord Jesus in the presence of God. Fresh air. And if it is the case, the only thing we have to do, not the only thing, because we have a list of things to do after that in chapter 10. But at the end of chapter 9, we have to wait, and that is the Adventist end of chapter 9. And so Christ, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time, not to deal with sin. Not to deal with sin. Don't be afraid and scared. But to save those who are eagerly waiting for him. And that is Adventist, and I want to wait for that. By talking with God? Yes, yes, I see what you mean.
The strong word is pleading, isn't it?
Yes, pleading, yes. That's a difficult question.
Yeah.
Yes, and a very practical one. The books are open, and fortunately, Verica is at the end of the list, so I have time to solve the problems. But Edwards, for example, well, it's done already. It's done already. So you're either saved or lost. So finished. That is the impression given for years, and I fear that many church members would have the same feeling. Is it a relief or not? Or is it a way to put a pressure? I would say that in Hebrews, the once for all, well, we have the aorist going together with it, once for all, and that is, it has been done in the past, and you can. The effects are, the outcome are in the past, in the present, and in the future. You see what I mean? So it's a continuity, in fact. It's not done, and that's it. So, but there is a way. And we have this idea, which is very interesting, in chapter 10. We read it a few minutes ago. There is a new and living way which has been opened. So you remember we had a cul-de-sac, dead end. Now we have a motorway. But of course, use it. Don't stay at the entrance. There is no tax poll to tax road to pay. No, the way is open, and the end of Hebrews is to say to the believers, please come. So that is the effect of the outcome of once for all. It's not a it's not a road which has been opened only for a few months or a few days or months. No, it's open, new and living way. That's interesting. Yes? Exactly.
In the sense of we have the title deed.
Yes.
In our hands.
Yes. And it was the same for those heroes. Even if they died, they were absolutely with this confidence and assurance, even if they died. And you see, sins, you can see sins in chapter 11 when they were persecuted and, well, that is the consequence of sin, of course, not their sins. But that is the problem, and they suffered a lot, but still confident. They were confident, assurance of things hoped, and they went through.
But that doesn't negate the historical process that's going to, end this finally. The process of history still has to work its way out.
You remember 928? To wait the exit. So there is the exit. We sometimes forget in Hebrews, we stress the entrance point, but there is an exit point just to come and to take us. All right? That is important, and that is very Adventist. And I want to be there. All right? I hope you want to be there too. Sure. No? Thank you. Let's break. That is time to break. Thank you to Microsoft. God, the Father and the Son. All right? When you want to travel by plane, you need to go, of course, to the airport, and you need to go through the security control. All right? So you have the door you need to go through. And so that is my problem. It will ring. Every time, I would say, exception, not to ring. I know that, and I can tell you, nothing in my pockets, no belt, nothing. I'm pure cashier, but I can tell the lady of the man. Well, it will ring. No. You have some? No. And ding, ding, ding. Okay. So please go back. Coins in your pocket? No, nothing. And it will ring. Why? I don't know. I thought. No, because even in France, it. So I thought at the beginning that it was due to I have a prosthesis here because I broke my leg in skiing years ago. So I thought it was the prosthesis, but no, it's not the case. When they have their I don't know how to call this stick, then it's not ringing there, but it's ringing the knees or, okay? Always. So that is the point, when you want to go through the control, sure, I'm pure, nothing. No, it will always ring. That is the purpose of the law. To make you aware that something is not working. You are not perfect. But when I was in the position at Collonges, so I had to travel very often. And of course, going to the same door at the same airport, you know the people. And so they would say, okay, we know this man. Please, come on. And that is Jesus and the Father. I know this man. Maybe you are full of money in your pocket. Go, come. We go through. You can take the plane because we know you. And somebody is knowing you and calling you. But if you say, well, I can do it myself. Okay, you are lost. I remember once, just a little piece of metal down here. So I went through. Come back. Okay. two or three times, and you know, three times, and you know, people behind you, they are not happy at all. They are not happy at all. And that is also the church. You are not alone going through the door. You need to take care. But you have someone saying, well, I know this guy. And of course, we had discussion, well, what is your job? I'm a pastor, I'm the principal of the school. Okay, the principal is coming, let's go. And that was very easy, all right? That is for me, the Father and the Son. I know him, I know her. Yes, problem, but I know her. You remember Jesus? People coming to Jesus and saying to him, we have done miracles. Okay, and what was the answer of Jesus?
Go away and have
the money. That is terrible. You know, when sometimes you meet again a friend, you think it's a friend, you have not met him for years, and you come, who are you? I don't know you. Are we ready to face this kind of meeting at the end? Sorry? Don't know. Verekia? Never heard of it? But if we experience, come, there is a way open. So you are already introduced in the sanctuary. You understand what I mean? As I was introduced in the Geneva airport, it's not the case in London because, well, too many passengers, and I don't travel that much. But maybe today, if I go back to Geneva, maybe I could find, again, a person in charge of security who would recognize me and let me go through. But you have been there already, so the Lord will take care of you. All right? That is the point. And that is the gospel. You see the difference between this gospel reconstruction and what we considered yesterday? What a big difference. What a big difference. It's not only improvement. It's a new world. Totally different. All right? And I would like, yes, we have some minutes. I would like to just recap this idea of holy place, because I think it's important. And tonight we will consider chapter 10, which is also a very nice chapter and with practical considerations, but we will tackle it tonight. So I would say, with this holy place idea, we have a kind in Hebrews of new theology of the holy place. The beginning of it, the beginning of this theology, we have it in multiple phases. But the first idea, I find it in the book of Exodus, chapter 27. That is not something we consider too often, but I think it's interesting. Chapter 27 of the book of Exodus and verse 21. Well, we need to read 20 and 21, please. Exodus 27, 20 and 21. Stop. That's enough. Thank you. What is the name given to the sanctuary here? Tent of meeting. Oh, that's interesting. Tent of meeting. And the context is clear. It is the sanctuary, but it is called here the tent of meeting. The same idea we had in chapter 25, but with another presentation. I will dwell among you. The tent of meeting. Interesting. To live among, to meet. And, of course, we have the second phases. That is the first one. Many commentators would say that this tent of meeting existed before the sanctuary itself. That was the first stage of it. I don't want to enter into details here. I'm not sure of that. But this idea of meeting place is very interesting. Of course, next we have the sanctuary, maybe, and next we have the temple. I just gave the quote, the reference, a few minutes ago, but we did not have time to read the text. John chapter 1, 14. Yes, you remember this one. And that is a very important text too in our theology of the holy place. We read in chapter 1:14, and the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of a Father's only Son. Well, you know that if you refer to the Greek, and he lived among us. Yes. He tabernacled among us. Jesus. We often use the name Emmanuel, God among us. But here in this first chapter, and that is the glorious opening of the Gospel of John, he tabernacled among us. That is the will of God, not to have a building, but to be in the middle of the, not to be in the middle of the place, but to be among his people. What would you like for your children? Just to build something for them? No, I want to spend time with my children, not only those who are with us in England, but with the families, the two families in France, and the granddaughters. We want to spend time together. We want to be in the middle, all right? And that is the main idea of the new theology of the holy place, to be together, to live together. And if I go to the last book of the Bible, that is Revelation. That is interesting, the idea of the sanctuary. You can find the idea of the sanctuary nearly in every chapter, either the altar or another piece of furniture. Well, you have the sanctuary everywhere, and it's mainly in a context of struggle, persecutions or problems. But when you reach the end, glorious end of the book of Revelation, and that is chapter 21, and sometimes it is poorly interpreted. Some commentators would say, well, there is no sanctuary in the book of Revelation. No, there is a sanctuary in the book of Revelation. Of course, yes. Many places. But when you reach chapter 21, the end, 22, I saw no temple in the city. But why? Why? For its temple is the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb. Okay? We have reached the beginning of the story again. That is an inclusio, you know? Meeting place. And here we are. God is no temple. Why? Because God is in the middle of the people, of his people. There is no temple in the city, but there is no, and but its, or for its temple is the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb. That is the end of the story. Holy place, that is to be. And you understand that that is very close to Hebrews, to enter the presence of God. That is exactly the same idea. So it's not only Hebrews. You are in the presence of God. That is the temple, or you could say that is the sanctuary. Deconstruction of the place and reconstruction. The place is in heaven, but it is much more than heaven. The place is God. And to enter the place is very important. Just some practical ideas. Maybe we should think again about our conception of holy place. Is it a holy place? This chapel? This church? This building? I don't know. I'm too new in the British Union to have the feeling. But I understand that, for example, in France, some chapels are holy places, some not. Wedding, okay. We want to be married, okay. No problem. He's a good Adventist, she is a good Adventist. Or, pastor, we want to be married. Oh, sorry. Is she a church member? No. She's a Catholic. Oh, sorry, but we cannot marry you in the church, holy place, for Adventists only. You see what I mean? Do you have this problem in England or in Scotland or holy place? Yes, yes. And keep silent. Holy place. Okay. I can understand that. I can understand that. It's so difficult for me to hear a good sermon when we have children crying and parents sluggish. Okay. That's a problem. But maybe we need to think again this idea of holy place. I finish in two words and I give you the opportunity to ask your question. So, and in addition to that, and that is different now, my feeling, what about postmodernity? Postmodernity or postmodernism? I think postmodern people are looking for holy places. And if I had money, I would try to build not a cathedral, but a holy place, open 7 days a week, 24 hour, not too much light, no sermons, just Bible readings, silent place, good traditional music, and you know, people are flocking and they are looking for such places to think, to pray, to try to solve the problems. I think that is a demand we have coming from the postmoderns. And maybe we should think, well, what about the church? I don't know here in England, but the churches in France, they are closed. The temples are closed. But if you open a small place, you don't need to have a cathedral. You don't need to have chairs, a good carpet. You know, you British ought to have carpet. Maybe too much. Bathroom everywhere. So, okay. That's a bit surprising for us. But, okay, good carpet, British good carpet, and quiet place. Quiet place. That is important for postmodern. A new conception of holy place. Because they are spiritual, but they don't know where to go. And please don't put a label at the entrance or notice board, Seventh Day Adventist Church. If you put church, you are lost. Quiet place, prayer room, or, well, you need to find something. You see what I mean? I think that is important. But that is the sanctuary idea, a place where they could meet God. To connect, yes. A connection place. Thank you. All right? Your turn. Yes, 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 yes. Thank you. Yes. Have you seen that we have started at Newbold College what we call the silent church? Well, they are becoming more and more popular. The students are, well, coming, and more than the students. You come when you want, you leave when you want. No sermons, no public prayer, nothing. You want to sit, you sit. You want to hear, you hear. You want to read your Bible, you read your Bible. You want to pray alone, you pray alone. Silent church. That is the idea. I think we have to think again this concept of holy place. And that is a need today. All right? Any other question? I think it's enough for this afternoon. We need to rest a bit before the last run. That's a good question. I would say that the first step is probably me and God, and then the community. We have this idea of the community, which is very strong in a house. You say house church or church house? House church. That is community, very important, but that is very poor for liturgy. I think we need to introduce a bit more of liturgy. But you can't do that in a house church. You see what I mean? And I think that maybe the future would be to have many small, or as many as possible, house church or house family churches, and the building for the meeting place, which is different. You go there not to meet someone, but... That is the vertical dimension, which is very important. You don't go there you are not searching the greeting or the love of the community. No, you have the family for that, the house, church house or house church. But when you go to this meeting, place, that's a bit different. And we need to have the cross, I mean the two dimensions, horizontal and vertical, that is, being together, the community side, and that is the worship problem we have today. Who is at the center of the worship? Well, my problem is that very often, well, I have a personal conception of the worship, but I understand that some could have another one. For me, the worship is mainly to meet God. I don't care what you feel, sorry, your pains, and that's not for the worship time. You see what I mean? When I come to the church, I need to hear God. I hear God through the songs we have together, the prayers, the sermon. But my problems, your problems, that's not the right time for me. I'm looking for the connection to God, all right? But I need other meetings to be connected with the community, all right? That is, I want a worship, a theocentric worship. You understand what I mean? And not an anthropocentric worship. Weeks ago, we had a worship at Newbold, and at the end of it, oh, nice to have you. We had fun. We had fun together. Sorry, that's not a worship for me. I don't go to the church to have fun. And that is the problem with the youth that is only mainly there. We need to learn then this dimension. Otherwise, it's only anthropocentric, and that's not enough. Even if it could be interesting, we need to have the two dimensions. All right? That is a point where we are a bit weak to liturgy. Liturgy. We don't have a liturgy. We are just an order of worship. But that's not a liturgy. And we are too much Calvinist, in fact. Well, you are Calvinist in Scotland. Okay? So, a church, no colors. That's not the case here. No cross, nothing. Pure Calvinist. and the music like that, you know, and you cannot move. Right. That is not this way for me. Okay.
In the concept of the meeting place, where is God? Why I'm asking that is that, you know, for years we've always taught that, you know, you go to church, and God isn't there. You bring God with you.
Mm-hmm.
But if the purpose of worship, but if we're saying that this is the meeting place, and as our brother just said, you know, it's where you meet God, it's not the horizontal, does God reside?
Well, I would say that for the postman, probably yes, he's there, and I need to go there to meet him. Postman view, I'm not sure it's a good one, but you have to take it into consideration, to take it on board. You know, have you ever been to a place like Thésée in France? Well, that is in France, but many British are going to Thésée. You know Thésée? So that's a place in the middle of France, in Bourgogne, close to Dijon, and the place has been started in just after World War II in 1946, and it's a place mainly for young people, and they are flocking, thousands and thousands of young people are going there every week, every weekend for the holidays, and the church open 7 days, 24 hour. You can come in, go out. They have three liturgies in the day, morning, 8:30, noon, and 8:30 at night. No chairs, carpet, sit down, and you are not asked what is your background, are you Catholic, are you Protestant, that is ecumenical. And the liturgy is very simple, but I can tell you, surprising. And the silence part in the liturgy is very important. 10 minutes. Can you imagine? You have about 2,000 people seated, 10 minutes, like that, without a noise. Adventist, oh, goodness, what are they doing? What is coming next? And I remember the first time, children or teenagers, they were maybe 12 years old, just in front of us, four of them. You can imagine, four Adventist children, teenagers, down for 10 minutes being quiet. Could you imagine that? No. But they were like that, thinking, maybe praying, not a single noise. And I remember when we entered this place, we were with a group, and oh, Marcel is not here. Marcel went there, but he was not with us this time. But when we entered this place the first time, of course, just before the beginning of the liturgy, silent time. But for us, okay, we started to speak. And a lady came. Okay. And we start again. And she came. And okay, a good deaconess, you know, good one. So, please, silent place. And it works. What is the liturgy? Songs. You don't have a leader. Can you imagine 2,000 people singing together, multiple voices, no one saying, well, now we will start singing hymn number 347, which has been written by such composer, and that is the story of my grandfather also, blah, 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 you know? Introduction of a hymn, and we will sing. The ladies, the first verse, and then the men, the second, and we come together a cappella for the third. Not a word. You have the brothers, how they are called, just in the middle of the church, down, seated, okay, and you just hear ding dong. Two sounds coming from a guitar, but you don't know where is the guitar. And that is the beginning. And everybody would start singing. Nobody is leading. The number of the hymn is just, they have an electronic board, okay? So you have 347, you have been given a book, so you go, ding dong, start. 347, well, first verse, second verse, third verse. always 337, keep going, and then nothing. You know that you have to stop. And it is done automatically. And then you have the Bible reading. So you are seated this way, but there is a special altar for the Bible reading. Automatically, everybody would look at the altar. And just a short reading, not a chapter, maybe I would say 10 verses, but which are a literary unit, you know, you have meaning in this section. And then time of silence. And then again, songs, and just a little comment, I would say 3 minutes, given by one of the brothers. Just a little comment on the text, but very simple. And then if you go there to it's the liturgy on Saturday night, 8:30, you are given a candle at the entrance. So imagine Adventist with a candle. What shall I do with that? Okay. But it is the light ceremony. So from the middle, one brother will start with one candle. The children would come and share the light. And in less than 10 minutes, I would say 5 minutes, you have light shared everywhere. Not a single word. I can tell you, at the end, you are not the same as an entrance. That is liturgy. It's not without problems, I know, but we need to look at those experiences. And people are flocking to Thésée. And if you said that you are a pastor, well, they will look at you like that. They don't like us. If you said you are a teacher, oh, we want simple youth people. Don't make theology, just share. Okay. Time to go for tea.